Now, there is an interesting conversation that has come up out of Guatemala.
Yes.
Was it Guatemala?
Guatemala, yeah. So the federal government in Guatemala have basically reminded their citizenry.
I'll give you a second to catch up with finding the source on that. But essentially, Guatemala is a really good crystallization of that discussion about what is socially acceptable.
Yes.
In terms of being literally paraded in front of the community.
Right, yeah.
Now, we're seeing hundreds of pride events all over Canada, more and more than in small towns, communities, and villages.
Yes.
We're getting droves of them popping up all over the place. Because, believe it or not, the gays don't just live in Toronto.
Yes.
Or Montreal or Vancouver. And in fact, the gays are among us, is really where it's at. About 1 in 10 is the sort of go-to stat.
Well, there's also a huge movement of people leaving the city to go back into smaller towns, partly because the cost of living in places like Vancouver.
And the pandemic drove so many people out of the towns and into the villages, for sure.
And because of remote work, a lot of people are working from home anyway. So if you're going to work from home, you may as well do it in Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... I don't know why, like, Guelph, I'm not...
pick on Guelph.
I pick on Guelph. I've been there many times. It's a beautiful city. I shouldn't pick on it the way that I do. It's just, it's a medium-sized town, inconveniently far from Toronto, but close enough where you could... Anyway, doesn't matter. Yeah, so it was, there was an attempt to put an injunction in Guatemala to ban the parade. And then the Supreme Court of Guatemala... they basically said, no, there will be no injunction against that. Guatemala has this sort of gray area where it's not that same-sex attracted people there are explicitly given civil rights. Like, there's no specific acknowledgement of gender or sexual identity as a protected class.
So there's no protections.
Yeah. But there's also nothing against them either. There's no criminalization. There's nothing. So the Supreme Court said, of Guatemala, said, no, the parade is permitted, but as an addendum, a strong request from the courts that the paraders conduct themselves in a manner that is polite and conducive to appearing in public.
Mm-hmm.
This is all vaguely translated. I could give you the direct quote, but then it wouldn't be in English. The general idea is politeness and decency. That those words appeared in their ruling multiple times. And I think what happened was basically they were looking at some of the more extreme versions of what they saw, recordings of other parades that happened, mostly in the United States. Sometimes you see it in Canada, the UK, Australia. But a lot of the you don't think there's X at Pride, here's a video proving it happens. But it's usually like...
It's worth noting that in Canada, only one parade has any kind of legal protection for a nudist float.
Yes.
And that is the Toronto Pride Parade.
Yeah.
Now, just quick background for our listeners who are like, how is there a nudist float in the Toronto Pride Parade?
Mm-hmm.
Under the law in Canada, you can't be nude in public unless there is a long-standing expectation that there be nudity.
Like in a change room.
Or a nudist beach.
Or a nudist beach.
And unfortunately, for those who don't want to see it, there has nearly always been nudists at Toronto Pride, so there is a long-standing expectation of nudity at Toronto Pride.
Yeah.
But your little local village pride, definitely no expectations.
Definitely no.
I don't know how I feel about this, because I think that pride, when we look at its protest roots, has always acted as the tip of the spear in pushing back on how socially acceptable is defined.
Mm-hmm.
What was the phrase the court used? Polite and kind?
Decent.
Polite and decent.
Yeah.
When the majority decides what is polite and what is decent, that has historically nearly always othered or trampled the rights of queer folks.
Yeah.
So there is always this pushback on what is right and decent, because being gay in and of itself, for a long time, in a lot of places, was neither right nor decent.
Okay, so the added context here, which I probably should have mentioned all along, is that Guatemala is officially a Catholic country. And this court ruling specifically was polite and decent from the perspective of Catholicism. Guatemala has a long, rich history of angry marchers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not so much angry marchers, people demanding civil rights, people demanding justice, people demanding equality. Guatemala already has plenty of that. They also actually have a really rich cultural history of political muralism. There's beautiful murals all over Central America. So that kind of, like, the general idea of being out there and demanding rights and demanding justice, that's not the problem. It was specifically, when you're talking about decency, it is, we are Catholic, maybe ankles are fine, this is not the Victorian period, knees are fine, this is not the 1940s.
But leave your speedo at home.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So it's more, conduct your, like, don't wear anything to the parade that you wouldn't want your grandmother to see you in, please and thank you.
But at the same token, you know, if during the run-up to the Olympics,
yeah,
if the Guatemalan Olympic swimming team goes marching through downtown in their swimming outfits.
I don't think they would, though.
But you see what I mean? I'm like, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
It's like, really they're sunny there. Like, they'd get sunburns.
This is true.
Yeah.
That would be inconvenient.
Very clear weather, yeah.
They need better skin protection. apply sunscreen, folks.
It's also time and place. Like, wearing a Speedo at the beach, fine. Wearing a Speedo to a business meeting, not fine. And I think what they're basically saying is, keep the context in mind, you are in public.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this also loops back to some of the debates within the community about Pride, about nudity and sexuality at Pride. I mean, that's a whole other can of worms.
The idea of that being, you mentioned, during the break, the idea of puppies.
Yes.
So this, we're not going to get into puppy in terms of the gay subculture or queer subculture.
I think most people know about it by now.
We're not going to get into it.
Yeah.
But what I am going to mention is that in the largest Pride events, there has been this small sort of Venn diagram overlap between the kink community,
mm-hmm,
and Pride events. A lot of kink folks are queer, and it's a way of expressing themselves, but not all. Do I think kink is an appropriate, like Pride is an appropriate venue for kink?
Mm-hmm.
Not particularly.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I look back at, the so many cases in Canadian queer history,
mm-hmm,
where decency laws,
mm-hmm,
where accusations of indecency has led to books being banned, books being seized by border officials in the famous case out of Vancouver,
mm-hmm,
you know, or all these other times. The idea of what is decent being decided by the morally righteous in the community has nearly always been weaponized against queer folks. But at the same time,
but this is also not just conservative grannies clutching the pearls. There are now people within the community who are also starting to say, yes, we get it, but this might be a bridge too far. Now, the other thing is the number of events that are dedicated to that.
Yeah.
Like, there are kink events. Just go to the events. Why are you doing, like, I don't know. It is such a huge debate. I also come down on behalf of don't wear anything in public that you wouldn't want your grandma to see you in. And if you do want your grandma to see you in that, that's,
I'm not gonna lie, my grandma before she passed saw me in some ridiculous outfits.
Yeah.
So I think my barometer is a bit wide on that one. But no, you're absolutely right. The idea of focus and attention. I don't know. It's Pride continues to be a hot topic in terms of the politics,
yeah,
in terms of the people, because ultimately it is about identity. It is inherently,
yes,
personal.
Yeah.
And it is inherently political. But when you've got 200,000 marches, 200 floats,
yeah,
and hundreds of thousands of spectators,
yes,
from all walks of life,
yes,
at all ages,
yes,
I think that there can be an assumption of what the common decency might be.
Yeah. Or, I mean, in some cases, it's people who are trying to deliberately flout common decency.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't know what they're trying to achieve other than they're just...
But What I will say is, going back to that tip of the spear metaphor I mentioned earlier, queer folks are often the, changing my metaphor here, the canary in the gold, in the coal mine.
Yes.
For where things go wrong. We look at, for example, in Iran, and the push against women wearing, not wearing headscarves, and that huge protest that originated out of that, that sort of morality police being a really extreme example of it. You go down a couple of notches on the extreme scale, you end up now in Georgia, Eastern Europe.
Yes.
Where they've just, they are in the process of rolling out what are sort of colloquially rephrased as don't say gay laws.
Yeah.
Where the public demonstration of queerness becomes illegal, you know, talking about it, it's effectively silencing others and pushing people into the shadows, into the closet, out of public view for decency.
Yes.
So it is a, I don't know if it's a, the slope is particularly slippery, but there is a slidey scale here between,
well,
you know, nude in Toronto, and then, you know, your morality police at the other end of the extreme.
As recently as the 1960s, Iran, Turkey, and Syria were all progressive, futuristic, very modern sort of, I don't want to say utopias, but they were very, very modern countries. And the flip to being what they are now, it didn't start with the criminalization of same-sex attraction. But that was definitely an early step. To say that it's not that it is... Like, saying canary in the coal mine is actually not a bad metaphor, because it is sort of an early sign of, oh, we're going in that direction now, aren't we? Now, Georgia, because of their relationship as a former Russian protectorate, they've been going weird, trying to be Western, but still they're Russian, but they're trying to be Western, but... They're never going to join NATO or the EU, but they're kind of in that zone. They're that weird situation. For this kind of thing to happen is kind of, unfortunately, from a political point of view, kind of not surprising that they're siding with the more Russian identity, even though Georgia fought really hard to no longer be a Russian protectorate. The fact that they're sort of lumping themselves in with that, that political sphere is kind of, unfortunately, again, not alarming. So, I don't know, it's a big...
Well, I just think that when we look at the big picture, you know, this protest stopping Pride Toronto, maybe not great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of how this went down.
It's awkward optics.
Yeah, and it may have ruined the parade for a lot of people who, for the first time, this was their first experience of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Pride parades continue to this day to play a pivotal role in being that balance between public and private.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me think, actually, of Hungary and Viktor Orban's rule there.
Yeah.
The US ambassador to Hungary just this past week publicly criticized Orban's government for using the machinery of government against the LGBT community, really leaning in on things such as decency laws to kind of silence and repress their communities. Where do you draw a line? I think that that is something that maybe as a community we have to kind of collectively land on. Is Toronto too far? Is... You know, where is the right point? I don't have the answer for that. But what I do have is the next song of the day.
Good transition. Well done.
Thank you very much. This is Cibayom, C-B-A-Y-O-A-O-M, by Forest. And we will be back just after this. We'll be back just after this track by Forest.
Every time you call my name, I'm gonna run. But the short breath's catching up to me. And I'm running out of air. One leg shorter than the other, there's only so far I can go. You know these souls are wearing down, and you just can't fix my soul now. I'm almost out. I can't be all you ask of me. instead of running on empty. As long as you need me, I'll come crawling with little breath that I've got left. Even when my knees are bleeding, I know I'm headed cause I've stopped beating again. I'm almost out of everything.
Welcome back to Cancria, home of Canada's Korean media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And I just want to quickly announce that some good news.
Yes.
We don't always get around to mentioning it, but Joe Biden, a lot of people talking about his recent debate performance, but not me. I am talking about the fact that he just issued a pardon to all of the veterans who were convicted and discharged over their sexual or gender identity.
During the Don't Ask, Don't Tell era.
Exactly. So anyone in the U.S. Armed Forces who had been discharged have now been officially pardoned by the President of the United States. Now, what most people haven't really talked about is a federal judge in California...
Mm-hmm.
Also recently just ruled, I think in the same week, the federal judge in California ruled that LGBTQ veterans who were discharged and prosecuted under this law can in fact sue the U.S. Pentagon, the Department of Defense for the U.S., over this particular practice. Good thing that they're all being pardoned. But I think the real story here is that when we look at Canada and the LGBT purge, the purge of queer folks in the armed forces, the Lavender Scare, as it was called at the time, it led to a massive LGBT purge fund being created. It's led to payouts to people who were affected by this. It led to the start of Trudeau's big apology tour. But none of that, despite what the Liberals may want you to think, came out of the goodness of their hearts.
No.
Sorry, not exclusively from the goodness of the hearts. The reason why the Canadian government rolled out the LGBT Purge Fund and the monument, and I believe partly a driving force behind creating the LGBT Secretariat, is because they lost the lawsuit.
Yes.
In fact, they lost the exact same lawsuit as this federal judge in California has now approved to go ahead in the United States.
And also to be to to be clear, the payout that came from the Canadian lawsuit, there was a little bit of, like, you know, for emotional damage kind of payout, but mostly it was just the back pay of what people would have gotten had they retired and just gotten their normal veterans package. It was just all the outstanding payments. And so it wasn't a lump sum.
It was a settlement.
Yeah, it was a settlement, yeah, exactly. Basically. Yeah, it's getting them what they were owed properly. And it wasn't, there was a little bit above and beyond that, but really not that much. But still, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, you were discharged 20 years ago, getting 20 years of what should have been your veterans pay since then, more or less in a few smaller payments all at once, like that's a big settlement. And
it's not going to be that much. Like, the settlements were not all of back pay. It was a settlement.
Okay.
And these folks are entitled to funds. If you, or anyone you know, was impacted by the LGBT purge in Canada, I believe that you can reach out to the fund and find out how they may be eligible for a potential payout on that one. But I just think it's really interesting that a lot of these things that drove the Canadian apology, the fund, the memorial, mm-hmm. came out of a lawsuit.
Yeah.
And where in the States they've apologized, they've pardoned, it seems like this lawsuit may drive a bit more action in that direction.
I mean, to be fair, the American system is largely driven by that anyway. A lot of their civil rights have been came out of lawsuits. Like, the decriminalization of interracial marriage came out of a lawsuit. So, I mean, that's really going back. But it just seems to be kind of how the American legal system is partly set up. You could, you know, for example, as Parliament or Congress or what have you, depending on what country you're in, get ahead of it and just pass a law through the normal system instead of having it go through the Supreme Courts. But for some reason, civil rights don't really work that way. Sometimes they do. Sometimes the government will be like, let's vote on decriminalizing this, giving these rights, giving these protections. But often it's a lawsuit.
Well, if anyone really wants to dig into the Canadian history of queer rights, it's about 50-50, or it was until recently.
Mm.
A combination of the government just losing in court challenges.
Yeah.
That's about half the time. And then creating laws to protect rights or dismantling laws that are punitive.
Or adding to the charter.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a combination of legal action and legislative action that created the balance of rights that we have in Canada. I want you to cast your mind back to June 16th, 1979. Do you remember where you were on June 16th, 1979?
In my mother's womb.
Really? At that time?
79?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was born in September, so I actually was.
Oh, wow, okay. Anyway, on June 16th, 1979, about 50 people marched from St. Louis Square to La Fontaine Park in Montreal. And amongst them was John Banks. He was one of the people that helped to organize the first Pride event in Montreal, or the first Pride march at that particular point in Montreal. Yep. Unfortunately, he recently just passed away.
Yes, I did read that.
So yeah, we do want to take a second to acknowledge the incredible contribution that John Banks gave to Montreal and the Pride movement across Canada as well. I do want to give some other updates. Hamilton police are now looking for four people they identified in a video of suspects that set fire to a pride flag at an elementary school.
In Stony Creek.
Yes.
Yes.
It's like, come on now, guys. An elementary school? Like, oh.
It may have been students at the elementary school. Kids get up to some wild things sometimes.
Yeah, I don't think they're looking for students. I think they're looking for adults. They believe they're between 15 and 19 years old, according to the Hamilton police.
Okay.
But really, this is just, it's pathetic behavior.
Well, anyone who believes in the innocence of a child doesn't remember being one.
Mm-hmm. Hey. All right, Woodstock, we mentioned before, is not hanging any pride flags this June, or what's left of it.
Okay.
But instead, they put them up on the sort of decorative banners. So they're not on flag poles, but they are on banners. I think that's a decent compromise.
Like a
Like, you know, when you go into a market or your downtown core, you've got those banners up on the side.
Yeah. I was thinking BEI, but I couldn't remember what BEI stood for. That's not right.
Business Improvement Area?
Yeah, BIA, that's it. Like the BIA light post flagettes, because they're not really flags. We were trying to... Pinafore. Was it Pinafore? Pinnacle. Pinna something. The triangle-shaped flags.
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought it was bunting. Because it was a bunch of them on a string that you're referring to.
Yeah.
But yeah, you weren't referring to bunting.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, there has been lots of other news happening all over the place. We are going to be trying to cover more of it next week. We didn't get to all of our news this week, unfortunately. But we will keep monitoring as we move forward. However, I believe we have run out of time.
Ooh.
And we are playing out by a track by Cedar Roots. This is You Make My Choo-Choo Train Go Woo Woo. It is a great track. You Make My Choo-Choo Train Go Woo Woo by Cedar Roots. I have been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Walked into the station about 2:45. Glimpsed you as I entered, felt my heart just skip a beat. Sat down as I waited and I couldn't quite believe. Saw you come on over and sit right down next to me. You make my choo-choo train.
For a CJSF Heritage Minute. Simon Fraser University, the 1960s. In the earliest days of SFU, a renegade unlicensed radio station begins broadcasting around campus. 1974. Volunteers establish the Simon Fraser Campus Radio Society, which operates CJSF to this day. 1985. The station obtains a cable license, bringing CJSF to a wider audience. And we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.